Then why didn't you pay the bill? Will you be my best man? You mean better man? How many of us do you expect there to be? Saturday morning, whenever you wake up. Did you get that suit for your wedding? Don't you like this suit? Gray doesn't suit you. Barbara said something about our getting married naked. Stark naked? Pletch nodded. She said it would be honest of us. Fitting. She says a marriage is the coming together of two bodies, male and female. You sure you want to marry Barbara? No. Wearing anything or wearing nothing would be better than wearing that dumb-looking suit. So, will you be my best man? My question is, where did you get that suit? I want to never go there. I thought you'd recognize it. Why should I recognize it? I thought you might have seen it before. Fire hydrants don't usually wear suits. Walking along the corridors at Haybeck, Harrison, and Holler. Alston's eyes widened. Haybeck? That's Haybeck's suit? Now you'll have respect for this suit. Haybeck wasn't screwing jurisprudence to get his suits from Goodwill. You stole a dead man's suit? I guess you could say that if you insist. I don't know, Fletch. I worry about you. So, will you be my best man? Fletch, old buddy, you shouldn't go anywhere without a lawyer, especially to your own wedding. Chapter 10 Frank, Fletch said. At the urinal, the managing editor jumped. He did not turn around. Who wants me?
That's a different question.
Different from what? In the men's room, empty except for them, Fletch stepped to his own urinal, three away from Frank Jaffe's. Matters in hand, Fletch said. Oh, it's you. Nice suit. Frank flushed. Didn't know the tide came in already this morning. Have I invited you to my wedding yet? Fletch asked. God, no. It's Saturday, you know. Which day is Saturday? Frank was washing his hands. End of the week, day between Friday and Sunday. Yeah, that's the day I try to get away from employees. Fletch followed Frank to the wash basin. I'm pleading a case, Mr. Jaffe. A case of what? Have you confessed yet to what's-her-name you might have a case of something or other? That's my point, Frank. Don't want a case. Don't want a dose. Don't want to go near that place. What place is that? Frank. Fletch shook his wet hands over the basin and then held them in front of him. I'm getting married Saturday, and you've got me investigating a whorehouse. Every nook and cranny. Frank dried his hands on a paper towel. Is this some kind of an office joke? Not yet, Frank said, but I'm sure it will be. Dump on the kid, is that it? Fletch, you need the experience, don't you? Not that kind, I don't. Not to get married, I don't. Come on, you asked for a job, a real job, so I gave you one. A whorehouse the week before I'm married? Gives you a chance to show your stuff. Let us see what you can do. Very funny. We want you to give it your all, kid. Get to the bottom of things. Really get into the crux of the matter. What we want is a penetrating report. We want everybody to get your point. You forgot something. What did I forget now? Frank looked at his fly. My expense account? Oh, we expect there to be expenses. Yeah, but I'm going to write my expense account with accuracy painful to you. That'll be a novelty. In detail. I'm going to write down exactly what money I'm spending on the Ben Franklin Friend Service and for what services. Expense accounts are never questioned if the story's worth the expense. Frank, I'm going to file a pornographic expense account. Frank opened the door to the corridor. Maybe we'll print that, too. What will the publisher say about that? Leaving the men's room, Frank said, Give it your best shot, kid. Chapter 11 As I live and breathe, said the beauty in the broad-brimmed hat, you must be Fletcher. Standing in the door of her small office, Fletch frowned. What makes you say that? Your suit, darling, your suit. Sitting corsetless at her console, Amelia Shercliffe, society columnist for the News Tribune, perpetually wore the facial expression of someone who had just been invited to a party. Perpetually, she had just been invited to a party. Everyone wanted dear Amelia at his or her party. For some, giving parties makes life worthwhile. For everybody, a sentence or two in Amelia's column made giving parties worthwhile. What Amelia did not know about people on the party circuit was not worth knowing. I've heard so much about you and your exciting style of dress. Fletch looked down at Donald Habeck's suit.
Exciting?
You don't mean to tell me you don't know what you're doing. At fashion, you're just an unconscious genius.
I'm unconscious, all right.
Look how you're dressed, Fletcher, darling.
Although Amelia was staring at Fletch, head to toe and back again, she nevertheless kept glancing at her telephone.
That gray businessman suit is miles too small for you. Surely you know that.
One or two have mentioned it.
Your trousers are up to your shins, your sleeves nearly up to your elbows, and you have yards of extra material around your waist.
Pretty cool, huh?
I'll say. The point of fashion, my dear, if you'll listen to old Amelia, not that you need to, clearly, is to wear clothes which make other people want to get them off you.
Have I succeeded at that?
Brilliantly. You look lost and uncomfortable in that suit.
I am.
Anyone seeing you would want to tear those clothes off you.
Would they turn down the air conditioning first?
And you encourage that impulse, you see. The jacket and shirt are much too narrow across your chest and shoulders. Your shirt buttons are straining while you're just ready to burst out of those clothes.
I'm a fashion plate, am I?
So original. What do you call that style?
Fletch shrugged.
Borrowed. Borrowed, Amelia said with great satisfaction.
She typed a few words on her console.
I'll use that.
Have you heard about jodhpurs?
What about jodhpurs?
They're going to be all the rage in a month. Cecilia's boutique is fully stocked with them.
Jodhpurs, darling, were all the rage months ago.
Oops.
Amelia glanced at her telephone. Now, darling, other than your presenting me with a vision of brilliant new young fashions, to what do I owe the honor of this visit?
Habeck, Donald Edwin. Haven't done my homework on him yet, but I was hoping you'd point me in the right direction.
Amelia's eyelids lowered. You mean that sleazy criminal lawyer who was shot in our parking lot this morning?
The same.
Not society, darling. A creature like Donald Edwin Habeck could be shot just anywhere, and was.
But supposedly he was giving $5 million to the art museum.
Slowly, Amelia Shercliffe said, I should think Biff Wilson would have the exclusive on that story for this newspaper.
Oh, right, said Fletch. I'm just tracing down the social aspects of it.
The social aspects of murder? Are there any other?
You know, the $5 million.
Did he actually give the $5 million to the museum?
I believe he was just about to announce it.
Well, Amelia sighed, people do give money to charities.
You say Habeck was not socially prominent?
People like Habeck exist in a very peculiar way, Amelia said. One knows them, of course, but at best at the other end of a telephone. You know, if one shoots one's husband in the middle of the night, having once mistaken him as one's lover and now wanting to have mistaken him as a burglar, one must have someone to call, mustn't one?
I guess.
One must know people of that sort well enough to be able to call them, but have them to dinner as a regular thing? No. Their presence might give one's husband's ideas.
I guess you're serious about all this.
The Habecks of this world are not to be trusted. After all, when we hire someone like Habeck, we're hiring someone to lie for us. Isn't that what we're doing? That's what people like Habeck do for a living. They're professional liars. We don't mind hiring them to lie for us, but do we want them to lie to us at our own dinner tables? Of far more importance, do we want them lying to other people about what happened and what was said at our dinner tables?
Generally, aren't lawyers trained to follow rules of evidence?
Amelia Shercliffe stared at Fletch a long moment. Lawyers, my dear, are trained to follow the rules of gullibility.
Okay. How rich was Habeck? Was he rich enough to give away $5 million?
I have no idea. Probably. He's always in the news over some sensational case or other. Although how criminal lawyers get criminals to pay their law bills has always been a puzzle to me. There must be some trick to it.
I think there is.
His partner Harrison does all the divorces worth doing. These chaps aren't in the law business to serve justice or just make a living, you know.
How about Mrs. Habeck? I'm a bit puzzled.
Have no idea. Don't even know if there is a Mrs. Habeck. I'll have to read Biff Wilson in the morning. As I said, the Habecks of this world do not shine socially.
Amelia, I was in Haybeck's house this morning, very briefly, I admit, but I didn't notice any paintings or other artworks that caused me to pause.
Do you know about paintings?
A little bit.
Of course you do. Foolish of me to ask. Look at the clever way you've dressed yourself.
Why would a person, especially, as you say, not socially prominent, and who does not have an immediately obvious interest in art, be giving $5 million to an art museum?
I find the generous impulse generally inexplicable.
What was he buying?
Respectability. That's as good an answer as any I can give in this case. Here's this man, Haybeck, whom society has been using like tissue, employed only when one has sneezed, or, to mix metaphors, like a high-priced prostitute, picked up, used, and dropped off without ever an invitation to visit hearth and home. He's getting older, or he was when his aging was concluded this morning. Wouldn't such a person at the age of 60 have the instinct to do something that says, "Ah, I'm as good as you are. I can give away $5 million, too."
Would society then accept him?
No,
especially if society knows there isn't another $5 million to be gotten from him.
But it might make him feel better.
That's very interesting.
I'm always very interesting. That's my job, you see.
Amelia glanced at her phone again. Clearly, Amelia's phone not ringing made her nervous.
So,
Fletch took a step backward toward the door.
Anne McGarahan and Biff Wilson were married once. I forgot that,
Amelia answered.
Yes, years ago. One of the greater mismatches in my experience. They were married for about 3 weeks, perhaps as many as 20 years ago. Why do you ask?
What happened?
Whoever knows what happens in someone else's marriage, let alone one's own. My opinion would be, if I were rudely asked, that Anne is a strong, intelligent, good, and decent woman who found herself married to a violent, nasty scumbag.
Phew! I'm glad I didn't ask.
But you did. You and I are in a rude business, Mr. Fletcher.
Did Anne ever marry again?
To someone who died. She's not now married. If you're interested in Anne McGarahan, who's old enough to be your mother, dare I cherish hope for me?
And Biff Wilson?
Oh, I shudder to think. Somewhere in Biff's background there lurks a succubus he calls wife, named Aurora, or some such dim thing. Now, unless you have more social notes regarding sleazy lawyers or fashion notes regarding jodhpurs...
I do, in fact.
Out with it.
I'm getting married Saturday.
To whom?
Barbara Ralton.
I never heard of her.
She sells jodhpurs at Cecilia's.
I should have figured that. Now, darling, the Stanwicks are giving their annual bash for symphony next week, and I'm absolutely desperate to find out which colors Joan's using for her table settings. You wouldn't happen to know, would you?
Me? I don't even know what Stanwicks are.
Chapter 12.
Hey, what are you doing at my desk?
All right if I use your computer terminal?
You're probably screwing it up.
Clifton Wolfe, religion editor, looked over Fletcher's shoulder at the screen.
Haybeck, he read.
You doing research for Biff Wilson now?
We all work for the same newspaper.
Like hell we do. I work for my inch of space, you work for your inch. Biff Wilson works for his foot and a half. If you're not on the story, buddy, you better get off it.
Fletch turned off the terminal.
Just curious.
Curious will turn you into dog food. Also, get off my chair.
I don't have a terminal of my own.
Fletch stood up, picking up a sheaf of notes he had made.
We always wondered why you were hired. Now we know, to cover whorehouses. I don't want anyone who spends his time in whorehouses sitting in my chair.
Haven't gone to the whorehouse yet. Haven't got my mother's permission.
No telling what you might be giving out. Al!
Clifton Wolfe yelled across the city room to the city editor.
Call the disinfectant guys. Fletcher's been using my stuff.
I bet you'd like this assignment, Fletch said. Only place they send you is church.
Scat!
Do you know of a poet named Tom Farley? Fletch asked. Fletch suspected that, without much deliberation, people who wrote for the various sections of the newspaper dressed like the people about whom they wrote. People in the business section wore business suits. In the society section, they always seemed dressed for a lawn party. In the sports section, white socks and checkered jackets seemed to be the style. Mentally, they identified with their subjects, too. Business writers thought in terms of power, profit, and loss.
Society writers cherished an incredible web of lines of the acceptable rudeness of old money versus the crudeness of new money, attractiveness versus beauty, style versus ostentation. Sports writers thought in terms of winners and losers, new talent versus has-beens, and the end-of-life standings. Standing before him in the dark part of the corridor was Morton Rickmers, the book editor. He wore thick glasses, a chalet tie, tweed jacket, baggy trousers, and soft, tire-tread shoes. It was clear from his book reviews that he loved people and their stories honestly told, loved words and putting them together in their most magical, concise form, and considered the good book human's most noble achievement, perhaps our only raison d'etre. Frequently, his reviews were more interesting and better written than the books he was reviewing.
"Why, have you met Tom Farley?" Morton asked.
"No."
"I might like to meet him," Morton mused. "I'm not sure."
"Just heard of him."
"First," Morton said, "I might enjoy knowing why you're dressed that way."
His notepapers in hand, Fletch held his arms out to his sides. "I've been assigned to investigate an escort service. Is that an answer?"
"Oh, I see. Trying to disguise yourself as an out-of-town businessman. You look more like the victim of a raid, obliged to grab someone else's clothes."
"You're nearly right. I lost my clothes this morning and had to borrow this rig." Morton smiled.
"I'm sure there's a story behind how you lost your clothes."
"Not much of a one."
"It's been years since I've lost my clothes. In fact, have I ever lost my clothes?"
"I don't know. It's easy to do."
"Make an interesting short story. How I lost my clothes. Something Ring Lardner might have done."
"Tom Farley lives locally, does he?"
"Oh, yes. Teaches something at the university. Being a poet in academia, he's probably wrongly assigned. You know, to teach English or something instead of music or math or equestrian skills."
"Is he the son-in-law of Donald Haybeck?"
"How interesting. I have no idea. You mean the man who was shot in the parking lot this morning?"
"Yes."
"That would be fascinating."
"Why?"
"You've never read him?"
"Not that I remember."
"Not many have. But if you'd read him, you'd remember. He writes what we call a poetry of violence. His best-known poem is something called The Knife, The Blood. His publisher entitled his book of collected poems after that one poem. I think I have a copy of it in my office. Come with me."
In his bright, book-walled office, Morton took a slim volume from a shelf and handed it to Fletch.
"Here's Knife Blood. You can borrow it."
On the cover, bare skin was deeply slashed by a knife. Blood poured from the skin, down the knife onto a satin sheet.
"This is a book of poetry?" Fletch asked. "Looks more like an old-fashioned mystery novel."
"It's unusual poetry, rather thin on sentiment."
"Thank you."
"I do believe in reading about what you're doing," Morton said, almost apologetically. "Widens the base of your perception."
Skimming through the book, Fletch said, "I don't suppose you know anything personally about Donald Haybeck."
"In fact, I do."
Morton folded his arms across his chest and turned away from Fletch.
"My sister's son years ago was accused of stealing a car and then running over someone in it. Intoxication, grand theft, vehicular homicide at the age of 18.
"I'm sorry to hear that."
"It was awful. The boy was your average, frustrated, sullen teenager who just went wild one night."
With his back still toward Fletch, Morton said,
"We hired Donald Haybeck. I mean, he's the sort you hire when things look really awful."
"At any price?"
"Yes, at any price."
"What happened to the kid?"
"Intoxication charge was dismissed. Haybeck proved the police had used the blood alcohol testing equipment incorrectly. The charge of car theft was reduced to using a car without permission of owner. I suspect Haybeck bribed the owner to say he knew the boy, and there had been a misunderstanding regarding the use of the car. And the vehicular homicide was found to be the fault of the car manufacturer. Apparently that model car had been proven to have something amiss with its steering mechanism."
Morton sighed.
"My nephew was sentenced to 3 months probation, no time in prison."
"Oh, wonder they didn't give him the keys to the city."
Morton slowly turned on his heel.
We're still ashamed of the whole thing. My sister and I, well, we ended up feeling like criminals, like we committed a crime.
In hiring Habeck.
I think in miscarrying justice.
Morton shrugged.
My nephew, with just enough of a misdemeanor on his record to make him an understanding person, is now a teacher in a San Diego high school, married, 3 kids of his own. But you know, I can't think of him without feeling guilty.
Did Habeck leave your sister with any worldly wealth?
Well, not much. She had to sell her new house, their second car, cash in their savings, and accept a little help from me.
What did you think this morning when you heard Habeck had been killed?
I've been thinking about it all day. When you live by the sword...
Behind his thick glasses, Morton's eyes were focused as if reading from a page close to his face.
Ironic, somehow. I see his ghost hurrying up from his corpse to defend the person who murdered him. For good long-range results or bad.
But always for money.
Yes. He used his brilliance to twist the legal system for money. Scoff at him, hate him for it. But when it came right down to it, we paid that money gladly to save Billy from an utterly ruined life, to give him a second chance, which he at least took. I'm not sure how many of Habeck's clients take that second chance, how many of them are just free to maim, kill, destroy again.
Thanks for the book.
If you do meet Tom Farley, tell me if you think he's worth a feature story.
What time are you going to be done?
Never.
Fletch was sitting at another borrowed desk in the city room. Having gone through his notes, he had just picked out items from the voluminous Habeck file he wanted copied.
What's it today? Barbara asked over the telephone. Wedding announcements, deaths, or writing headlines for other people's stories?
Hey, I'm working hard for you, kid. I'm trying to plan an item in Amelia Shercliffe's column about jodhpurs. And the place to buy them is Cecilia's Boutique.
Anything would help. I'm so sick of wearing them.
You have to wear them in the store?
Yeah, a plum pair, would you believe it? Customers are supposed to come in, see me in my jodhpurs, say, "Oh, darling, they're divine," and buy themselves or their daughters a pair.
But do they?
No, they look me up and down, obviously wondering if I'm sufficiently trendy even to wait on them. I'll meet you at the beach house, right?
It's an awfully long drive.
I only have the house another few days until the wedding.
When you gave up your place, why didn't you move into my apartment? It would have been much simpler.
What's wrong with having a beach house for the week before we get married?
Why don't you spend tonight at my apartment? That way I won't have to drive all the way out and back.
Hey, I'm getting paid for house sitting. I know it's not much, but we need the money, right?
Right. It's just that I'd sort of like to stay in town and keep checking on a few things.
I hear someone got bumped off in your parking lot this morning.
True.
A lawyer of some kind.
Some kind.
One of the ones you see in the newspaper all the time, a Perry Mason type, murder trials and big drug deals.
Habeck, Donald Edwin Habeck.
That's right, interesting story. I mean, it should be interesting. I look forward to reading Biff Wilson about it.
Fletch said nothing.
Fletch, you're not doing anything on that Habeck story, are you?
Well, there was a coincidence. I was just about to meet him when...
You'll get fired!
Some confidence you've got.
You haven't written enough wedding announcements yet to take on a big story like that.
I haven't taken it on. I just intend to sit and watch it.
You've never just sat in your life.
Well, maybe not just sit.
Does anyone know you're sticking your nose into this story?
Barbara,
we're getting married Saturday, Fletch. First, you don't have time for any such story. Second, it really would be nice when we come back from our skiing honeymoon if you had a job. I'm pretty sure Cecilia won't have offloaded all her jodhpurs by then.
Relax. If I turn up something interesting, something useful, you think the newspaper would turn the information down?
Fletch, have nothing more to do with this story. Get away from it. Jealousies on a newspaper can't be any different from anywhere else.
Anyway, I've been assigned to a different story altogether.
What is it?
I'd rather not tell you just now.
Why not?
Well, it's too far removed from wedding announcements, births, deaths. A travel story. You might say it's a travel story. It might even turn into a medical story.
You're not making much sense.
That's because I haven't really got a hold of the story yet. I'm writing it for the society pages. Fletch, I don't think there have been any society pages in this country for half a century. You know what I mean, the life pages, living, style, you know, the anxiety pages. You should be all right doing a piece for the anxiety pages.
Sure, anxieties, we all have them. You see, I was using my new influence to feed Cecilia's jodhpurs into Amelia Shercliffe's column.
Nice of you. When will you get to the beach house?
Soon as I can.
What does that mean?
It means I have to run off some copies from a file, and then make one phone call.
Only one?
Only one.
And it has nothing to do with Haybeck?
No, no, said Fletch. Nothing to do with Haybeck. It has to do with this other story, the one for the anxiety pages.
Fletch hesitated just slightly before pushing the button which would make selected copies from Haybeck's file. Sitting at his borrowed desk, he hesitated again, just slightly, before picking up the phone and dialing an in-house number.
Carradine, the voice answered.
Jack, this is Fletch.
Who?
Fletcher. I work for the News Tribune.
Are you sure?
The financial writer's tone was mildly curious.
Oh, yeah, you're the guy who committed that headline a couple of months ago. What was it? Western Can Company sits on its assets.
Yeah, I'm the one.
That one, huh? Guess we're all young ones.
Don't know why everybody objected to that.
Because we'd all heard it before. Did you call for forgiveness, Fletcher, or do you have a hot tip for me on the international debt?
You know that guy who was murdered this morning?
Haybeck? No, I didn't know him. Saw him once at a lunch for the Lakers.
A couple of guys here are saying he was very rich.
How rich is very rich?
That he was about to give away $5 million.
I doubt it. He was a worker. A high-priced worker, but a worker. I doubt he had more than he'd earned. What were his assets? A partnership in an admittedly prosperous law firm? What's that worth year by year? Also, whatever he'd been able to accumulate over a lifetime of work. Maybe he invested in something and struck it rich, but if he had, I expect I would have heard of it. He was too much of a street person ever to have inherited anything much. And again, if he'd married great wealth, we would have known about it.
What about the mob?
You think he was associated with the mob?
Oh, a criminal lawyer.
Oh, sure, he probably had mob clients, but the mob doesn't make anybody rich but the mob. Despite what you read, the mob's biggest problem is financial constipation. The riskiest thing they do, at least regarding their own safety, is dispersing money. In fact, it's such a problem for them, I don't know why they bother making so much.
What's your guess as to how much money Haybeck had when he died this morning?
Just a guess.
Take your time.
Working hard all his life, paying his taxes reasonably well, giving little away, not making any big stupid investments, not running through too many wives, which are a lot of big ifs. I'd say he'd be pretty lucky to have $5 million of his own.
So, Fletch said, Sam wins the office pool.
Who's Sam?
Oh, Fletch said, he drives one of the News Tribune delivery trucks, the downtown run.
Fletch gathered the selected copies from the Haybeck file. On top of the stack, he put the volume Morton Rickmers had loaned him, The Knife, the Blood.
Then he hesitated a long moment before picking up the phone and dialing the number that he had once thought belonged to a pizza delivery establishment. The voice that answered was young, female, strong, clear, healthy, and friendly.
Ben Franklin Friend Service. You want a friend?